4. Through the Window. After his third sleepless night, Modo began to think he was trapped in a reenactment of Macbeth, for he was seeing ghosts and hearing screams. Every time he closed his eyes to sleep, the gaunt faces of his parents rose before him. They were crying out in pain, metallic hounds pursuing them, or they were tied to torture racks. The nightmares were particularly vexing. Over his lifetime, he'd given little thought to the man and woman who'd abandoned him. Now they were popping up in his head, pleading for his help. How dare they? They'd sold him to a travelling freak show. Sold him! He owed them nothing. He also knew Colette would be waiting in Paris, sitting alone at a restaurant table. He had cared deeply for her, and had taken a great risk in showing her his face. It had turned out badly. He owed her nothing, either. He punched his pillow, sending feathers into the darkness. The truth was, he had never shirked any duty, large or small. Yes, his appearance was likely the reason his parents had abandoned him, and it was definitely the reason Colette hadn't been able to say goodbye face to face. If there was one lesson he had learned from the rain people of Australia, it was that beauty truly was in the eye of the beholder. They had accepted his ugliness, even seeming to worship him as a god. But the gift the tribe had given him was perhaps the greatest gift of his life. They had looked at his face without reservation and with absolute love. They had seen him for who he really was. His was not a face that the civilized could love. But that was their problem. Modo sat up. For all their faults, his parents didn't deserve to be in such danger. It's my task, Modo thought. My duty. Besides, he wanted to prove his parents wrong. They should never have given him up. He pictured himself breaking them out of a jail cell and how they would beg his forgiveness. Faceless and nameless, they still shared the same flesh, the same blood. And that blood was French. It had been more than a small betrayal. Mr. Socrates not telling him that the blood in his veins wasn't English. Modo felt weakened by that knowledge, for he had believed that British blood and intellect were what got important things done in this world. He'd been trained to serve England, in fact had served the country well, and yet he was not English. He stepped gingerly onto the floor. It creaked as he dressed. It crossed his mind that he should be going directly to Octavia, though it was inappropriate to enter a woman's room at night. He thought of gently poking her shoulder and asking her to make the journey with him. But how could he ask her to both betray Mr. Socrates and risk her life? These were his parents, not hers. And it would be easier without her. He had not shown her his face again since their return from Queensland. He didn't want her to see it. She desired a handsome prince, she'd admitted as much. His friendship, of course, she wanted, but not him. He must go it alone. He stuffed a wallet in his pocket, knowing it held 20 Canadian dollars and enough British pounds to buy third-class passage on a steamer. He slipped a stiletto into his belt. Into his haversack he tossed a pocket lucifer. The electric device had proven quite handy and cast a surprisingly bright light. He also threw in spare netting masks, along with a few trousers and shirts. He would need very little. He decided to slip out the window. He approached it, wincing at each complaint of the floorboards. He had opened the window several times in the last week, but it wouldn't budge. He applied his strength, and the wooden frame squeaked noisily. He was strong enough to tear it open, but that would wake up the entire household. He tiptoed out into the hallway, and paused in front of Octavia's door. Lifting his hand to knock gently, then lowered it. She would be angry that he'd left without a word, even more angry when she learned he was going to France to see Colette. Yet, you must be your own man, he told himself. He stopped at the hallway window, the crescent moon drawing his gaze. He opened it easily and climbed silently out onto the roof tiles. The pitch was not too steep. Freedom was only a short climb to the ground. Are you leaving us, young sahib? Modo nearly fell off the edge of the roof. Thapa? Yes, it is I. The words seemed to float in the air, coming from no particular direction. Then he saw his weapons master leaning against the dormer wall, hidden in shadow.
How did you know I'd be out here?
I have come to know you well over these last 14 years. Restless sleeping for 3 nights in the room next to me means something. And a young man like you can't ignore the news of a threat to your parents, so I took the liberty of nailing your window shut.
Ah, you do know me well.
I know your heart.
Sometimes Tharpa seemed more mystical than human.
I repeat my question. Are you leaving us, young sahib?
No, Modo said. I was only... Oh, all right, then. Yes, I am.
Ah, then Mr. Socrates wins.
Wins?
We had a wager between us.
A wager?
Modo lost his footing momentarily.
Yes. I said that despite the calling of your heart, you would not leave without permission. He believed you would.
The very fact that they'd foreseen his departure as though he were as predictable as a wind-up soldier was most distressing.
You bet on me.
Just a small sum. Do not worry for my financial loss. Now, I suggest you go back through the window. Mr. Socrates awaits you in his office.
Modo shook his head in frustration and stepped back inside the house, followed by Tharpa. It was as though he'd been caught stealing sweet biscuits. To these men I'm still a child, he thought. Trudging down the stairs to the main floor, he saw light under the door of Mr. Socrates' office. Tharpa knocked gently. Enter. Modo blinked in the brightness, but strode in, holding his head high. Mr. Socrates gave him a tired smile.
So, you were slinking out, he said.
I wasn't slinking. You were leaving without permission. When I was a soldier, desertion was a capital crime. In India, we would tie men to the mouth of a cannon and let the cannonball do the rest. That's barbaric.
It was.
I myself was not in favor of it. It did inspire discipline, though.
Well, this is not the army.
No, Modo. What we do takes more finesse than what any company of soldiers does. He lifted his sterling silver letter opener, a miniature saber, from the desk. They are a hammer. We are the surgeon's knife. I've not been a knife, or should I say an agent, for some months now. It's clear I'm no longer of use.
Mr. Socrates sighed and rubbed at his temples.
What's clear to me is that I have made a mistake.
Modo raised his eyebrows.
Had Mr. Socrates ever admitted to a mistake before?
And what's this mistake?
I have let my emotions, my anger at you, get the better of me. You have been trained to a keen edge, and you grow bored with inaction. I should have kept you busy with tasks and goals. Instead, a missive from France arrives, and its contents stir you up. You become obsessed. I must purge you of your obsession.
Purge me?
Yes. I've decided to send you to France.
Modo blurted, You'll send me?
Yes, it's just a small assignment, really. I've booked a steamer passage for both you and Octavia first thing in the morning. I've decided that it's important for us to discover whether or not you have any remaining relatives. I have no idea what the Guild or the French would want with them, if indeed they are seeking them out. It would take years to train another agent as skilled in transformation as yourself. I suppose either organization could be looking at the long game, or they have some goal that I cannot surmise. You are to be my eyes and ears again. Just don't become overly emotional.
Emotional?
Yes. You shouldn't think of the people in question as your parents.
And who are my parents, then?
Mr. Socrates pressed his lips together, a look of confusion crossing his face.
You don't need parents, Modo. You have done very well with the appropriate guidance and training. A trip to France is your chance to free yourself from the past.
Could one ever be free of the past? Modo wondered.
It seemed to shadow him wherever he went.
Does Octavia know that she's been assigned to this mission?
Mr. Socrates shook his head.
She'll know so in the morning. She'll be pleased to do something more exciting than eating croissants in Montreal.
Modo wasn't so sure of that. In fact, when he pictured her and Colette in the same city, A certain queasiness set in.